Te reo ererangi o te mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
The National Council of Women of New Zealand held its annual conference in Otatahi Christchurch on October 5th, 2024 at the Commodore Hotel. The conference featured an opening address by the Honorary Nicola Grigg, Minister for Women, and sessions with local organizations working to support women and girls. Plains Media has captured this conference, and now we want to share it with you, our listeners. Next is the opening address by the Honorary Nicola Grigg.
Tēnā tātou katoa, e raurangi tira mā, e wahine toa, e hoa mā I te whānau. Welcome to all you leaders, to you strong women, to your friends, to family. Thank you for being here today. I'm really proud to be the President of the National Council of Women of New Zealand. And to be able to greet you all for our first in-person conference since 2019. And a shout out to the Southland branch who did try and do an in-person conference in 2022, a couple of years ago. It didn't quite work, it was COVID times. But isn't it just so beautiful right now that we have the time and the space to come together, to be here to renew friendships, to make new ones, to share our thoughts, our ideas, to plan for the future, to really generate something that comes with being here together in person. Right. So the AGM will be still hybrid so that we can include everybody from our organisation, even those who can't be here physically today. But for you here in the room, please make the most of the time together to be present, to be here in the here and now, and to have those face-to-face conversations. He aha te mea nui o te ao. What is the most important thing in the world? It's people. He tangata. He tangata. He tangata.
Te aroha.
No mai, haere mai, piki mai, whakatau mai, tēnā tātou katoa. Kia ora.
Tēnā koutou, no mai, haere mai, ki Otatahi Christchurch. Thank you so much for your warm mihi, and we really appreciate your support for our organisation. Ko Louise Tapper, aho. I'm the co-president of the National Council of Women New Zealand Otatahi branch, Christchurch branch, and it's a real pleasure to be welcoming you all here to the Commodore Hotel, to the National Conference and AGM here on behalf of our branch. I'd like to welcome Nicola Grigg. We're very pleased to have Nicola here to give the opening address. Nicola's not only Minister for Women, Minister of State for Trade, and Minister for Agriculture, Horticulture, isn't it? Associate, thank you, Nicola. She can tell you anyway. But she's also mum of Geordie and had to leave Geordie to go to come today to come and talk to us. So we're very grateful that you're here, Nicola. Thank you so much.
I'll bring my water. It's a bit of a frog in my throat. Before I even start, I do apologise. Geordie's developed some blinking dairy allergy and he didn't get the memo about needing to be here today, so he's been a right toad. A sore tummy. So anyway, I've left him with his dad, so that's great. not my problem anymore. Hey, look, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Thank you so much for the warm welcome, Louise. Thank you, Suzanne, for the invitation to be here today. I really do appreciate it. As much as I've been the Minister for Women since late last year, I've been on maternity leave for most of this year, so I'm really only 2 or 3 months into the job, and I'm just loving being able to get around and engage in with groups like yourselves and meet you all at a personal level. It's just really so rewarding, and it makes the job so much more inspiring, really, being able to meet people like yourselves. So, look, thank you for the invitation. It's a good opportunity for me to formally acknowledge the National Council of Women and the significant contribution that you all make to women's progress. And I really want you to be aware that you are so highly regarded in that field, in that sphere, for the work you do. Your services to women above and beyond, at a family, at a community level, at local, national and international levels, you really do lead the way in advocacy and research, and the actions that you take are extremely valuable to all of us. So thank you. The conference is obviously a really good opportunity for women who are leading the way on gender equality across the country for everyone to come together. And again, thinking of those down in the deep south that haven't been able to make it, a bit waterlogged at the moment. But I do want to thank you particularly for the work you do in raising the value and the visibility of women across the country. I think that is unacknowledged most often, and I think it's a really important point to make. We know that there is still, unfortunately, still a really strong case for each and every one of us to be advocating for women's rights. And progress can only be made by embracing a range of perspectives to respond to the challenges and opportunities that women across the country face. So in the speaking slot that I've been given, I just want to take an opportunity to talk you through my priorities as the Minister for Women. And they are, you know, around economic equality, around health equity, around education, around leadership, and around safety. So I'll walk you through those a little bit. But, you know, we all know New Zealand has made some really great inroads into advancing gender equality, but we know women do still, in 2024, face a lot of barriers across all areas of life. That includes employment, it's equal pay, equal representation, safety from violence, and health and wellbeing. And the Council, as you all know, has been an early campaigner for equality between men and women in areas like marriage and employment, urging that women be able to be elected to Parliament, of all things, appointed to public offices like the police, and being able to serve on juries. But one of my priority areas as the Minister is elevating the equal representation of women in leadership positions in public office across the country. And you'll all be aware of the importance of that equal representation. To all of us here in the room, it's a no-brainer, but God forbid, not everyone's aware of that, which is why we need to do that we can to support women on this venture. Removing the barriers for women entering public office is something that I'm really focused on, and I do advocate about it at every opportunity that I get. I just want to quickly mention CEDAW as well. I'd like to take the opportunity to acknowledge that the work that the National Council of Women continue to do at the grassroots level to address the real needs and concerns of women. We are not afraid to challenge the government of the day. That's really important on the key issues that are impacting women, and some of which are contentious, and that's great, but we need that strong advocacy so that the leaders, those in government, irrespective of the colour of the government, understand what are the prominent issues, and then in turn can take action to address those. And I do note some of the challenges outlined in that shadow report on the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, as we call it, know and love it, as CEDAW. It's often described as the International Bill of Rights for Women, and I think quite rightly. And I know that the Council here has played a role in coordinating the response of the NGOs and the perspectives and the insights that the NGOs have all brought together really are vital for that progress. And so I do appreciate how much work has gone into that, because I know NGOs in this day and age operate on the smell of an oily rag. But our work towards improving outcomes for women and girls, it needs to be grounded in the realities that they're facing in their everyday lives. And it is important, I think, and I said this in opposition and I say it in government, that the government is challenged on some of the areas and some of the issues so that we can deliver real results to women and girls. Because, and I say this to irrespective of whether I'm talking to a trade audience, to an agricultural audience, to a women's audience, we don't know what we don't know. And I take the view that legislation passed in the ivory tower of Parliament affects the everyday user on the ground. And so therefore, justifiably, the everyday user on the ground, I use those in inverted commas, needs to have an input at the outset. Otherwise, you know, as the end user of that legislation, it just doesn't work, it doesn't fit, because it hasn't been fed into at the outset. So, as I mentioned earlier, I want to talk about some of the areas that are real priorities for me, and the gender pay gap is the big clanger in the room. It is one area that continues to impact women across New Zealand, and serious action really does need to be taken to address it, because in my view, it's gone too far for too long. We've made some important advances, as I'm sure you're all aware, in education over the last few decades, with young women now leaving school with NCA level 2 or above and graduating with tertiary degrees at a higher rate than their male counterparts, and that is a really cool thing. Women's participation in the labour force has also increased. We're being encouraged in careers where men have traditionally dominated, that's particularly in those STEM fields and in construction. But despite all of that, there is still bias against women, which makes those pay gaps really hard to address. Here, on average, men are still earning about 8.2% more than women. And in some professions, and for women of different ethnicities, that gap is even starker. So we know in order to address that, we have to identify it. And we know sunlight is the best form of disinfectant. Doing that, exposing that, applying the sunlight is one of our big priorities for the Ministry of Women. So in June, when I say we, I mean myself and the Ministry of Women, because they do all the hard work and they really are world class at what they do. And I would like to acknowledge Maddie as our representative here today from the Ministry. Callie Coombs, the CE, is actually currently away in Geneva at the moment representing us at CEDAW. So our thoughts are very much with her, and I know she will represent us exceptionally well. But back in June, sorry I've digressed again, we announced that we are going to be working with business leaders across the country to develop a common approach to being able to calculate and publish gender pay gaps. It's actually a lot more complicated, I think, than I was even, than I actually really understood until we began to delve down into it. So we're having to work with those businesses to understand the intricacies of it, and to be able to provide work with them in order to be able to create and provide a clear and consistent method for doing this in order to make it easier for organisations to measure, to understand, to share, and then importantly take action to close those pay gaps. My great ambition is that, and it is a voluntary tool, is that there will be a sea change, that it will start with a groundswell movement, that more and more and more women who are seeking employment, who are in employment, young women particularly entering the career and entering into the workforce, will then have the confidence to be able to sit down in those negotiations and at those job interviews and be able to benchmark themselves against their male counterparts, because it is all very public. So all going well, and I know we're now October, we should, fingers crossed, be able to make an announcement on this just next month. Improving the safety of women. I'm sure every single one of us in this room stays awake at night every time there is an issue on the news, or we hear anecdotally, or we hear through our NGOs who do such extraordinary work in this space, about violence that occurs in this country. There is no reason to shirk around the idea. You know, New Zealand has, it is a stain on New Zealand, our incidences of family violence. And it was actually an NGO that approached me recently and said she's really frustrated with the fact that it had been sanitised and we now call it domestic abuse. And she said, call it out for what it is. It is violence. There's no two ways about it. And so I've taken that on board, and I do that where possible. But safety from all forms of violence, it is fundamental to women and girls' full and equal participation in public and private life, as well as, of course, you know, it's a no-brainer, of their health, their well-being, and their economic outcomes. Women in New Zealand are disproportionately affected by the impacts of family and sexual violence, and stalking, and online harm. The impacts of violence are serious, They are long-lasting, they are wide-reaching, and they have a major barrier to gender equality. So I'm part of a ministerial working group that is working to ensure that the number of women who are harmed by all forms of violence is significantly reduced. It is a monumental task. It includes supporting work to make stalking illegal under the Crimes Act, which is expected to progress by the end of this year. We all know that oftentimes sexual violation or violence or harm begins with stalking. So that is expected to be passed by the end of the year. We're updating the National Strategy and Action Plan to Prevent Family and Sexual Violence, which I'm sure you've all had an input into, Te Ao Rere Kura. And one of the areas that I've been increasingly concerned about is that really disturbing trend of violence against women online. I see it myself, I'm sure many of you do. It's no fun holding these jobs that are public where people think that they can have a crack at you online just because they're nice and safe sitting there behind their keyboards. But I know that the council also shares that concern and again acknowledging you for taking a lead in this space. But tackling this online violence, It's really complicated, like so many things in this world. But there are certain things that make it difficult to address. And again, not shying away from the task ahead of us, but these are the things that we're having to work our way through as we look to measures to prevent it. But, you know, it's anonymous. That makes it really easy for the perpetrators. It's accessible and it's affordable for those perpetrators. It can be constant, it can be easily propagated. And it all contributes to the normalisation of violence against women and girls. But that does not mean that we can't take action. It's not dissimilar to the gender pay gap. And first we've got to identify it to be able to target a solution to it. And the ministry is now working alongside online safety organisation NetSafe to develop some practical guidance to support organisations who work with women in the spotlight. And dealing with technology facilitators, as it's called, technology facilitated gender-based harm. Let's just call it out for what it is. It's cyberbullying. It includes the likes of councils who will next year have local body elections. And so I've asked for the ministry to be able to have our tool in place so that I'm hoping to be able to make a public announcement alongside the women mayors of New Zealand ahead of election season, because again, it is proven that this online harm, this online abuse is really turning good women away from seeking public office. Everyone always says to me, oh, you must have a thick skin to deal with this job. I say, well, yeah, I do, but it's a thick skin covering a sensitive soul. And, you know, the stuff that gets said hurts, and it is completely unexcusable in this day and age. Women's representation, happily, though, on councils is the highest it's been. I think in 2022 is at 46%. But the reason I'm so dedicated to trying to stamp this out is because I want to see those numbers continue and I want to see them escalate. And I am deeply concerned that if we don't do something about it, women are just going to turn away in droves. And you can understand why. In 2019, as I'm sure you're aware, there was a review into bullying and harassment at Parliament. And it found that the online harassment of MPs by members of the public included sexual and violent threats, and it's becoming increasingly common. So all this, again, has a real potential to impact the participation and the engagement of women seeking public and political life. Health outcomes is a big one. I think we all know that COVID had a massive impact on women. The rough estimations are that about 50,000 women missed a mammogram and just as many missed their cervical smears. So, you know, there's a big backlog for the health sector to work its way through to ensure that those women have up-to-date testing and screening. But raising the visibility of women's health and improving our outcomes is a really important piece of work that, you know, it's cross-government, it's cross-party. But we know cancer, it touches thousands of New Zealand families every year. And I think just under 3,500 women are diagnosed with breast cancer every year. It's the single biggest killer of women in New Zealand. So we've been really pleased to be able to extend the free breast screening age to include 70 to 74-year-olds. And that means about 120,000 women will be eligible for that that screen every 2 years. Catching more cancers earlier means better treatment outcomes. And so we're expecting, and it just sounds little, but it's significant. We're expecting about 22 lives will be saved every year by increasing that screening. That's 22 women, that's 22 families that won't have to go through the grief of losing someone they love. That's at the outset, and we're expecting about another 65 should be caught and saved once we've been able to implement the program fully. But it's really encouraging at the other end of the spectrum physically to see that there's been a massive uptake as well in that self-testing, the cervical screening that became available about a year ago. So since September last year, so just over a year, 380,000 women have been able to carry out that home test, that home screening, with 80% of them reporting results back to their GP, which again, that's a really good thing. It's a fantastic outcome, and to me, anything that has the potential to save lives is worth doing. But well, you know, there are some positive outcomes. There's still a lot of work to do to improve health for women and to ensure women are represented in wider health objectives. And you'll all be really pleased, I'm sure, to see that PharmAc has been able to fund estradiol, the medicine that we do have available for women going through menopause. A lot of people say women suffering menopause, which I haven't quite got there yet, but I'm sure it is a sufferance that we have to endure. But for now, I'm going to say we're going through menopause. One of the other things I wanted to mention is around leadership. I've touched on it very briefly, but growing the number of women in leadership positions across public and private sector is so essential to the well-being, I think, of our society. We all know in this room, probably because we have an active insight into it, that leadership is about diversity and the importance of having that range of perspectives to enable fresh thinking and fresh ideas and to manage challenges and opportunities from a different perspective. And there are many, many great leaders in New Zealand. We are so blessed that have achieved so many amazing things. And a big part of what we need to do to inspire that next generation of leaders is to shoulder tap them. We need to identify, we need to support, and we need to grow those future generations of women into governments and encouraging them to take that next step into leadership roles. And look, I'm standing here in front of you purely because a woman that I'm sure you'll all be very, very familiar with said to me, you know, when I thought about the idea of politics, she said, well, give it a go. We need more women like you in these roles. And otherwise, if she hadn't said that to me, I wouldn't have had the courage to run for politics. But we've seen what can be achieved by setting targets and taking coordinated and concerted approaches to increasing representation across governance particularly. So for the last 4 years, representation on public sector boards has reached us over 50%. And that's been achieved by a deliberate effort from everyone involved in the public sector to strive for that diversity. So there is actually legislation in place that ensures ministers have to make sure there is equal representation across public sector boards. So women are holding just under 54% of those public sector board and committee roles. And equally importantly, and I'd love to see it keep rising, they're holding 46% of board chair roles. And that is very exciting. There are so many. I think that, you know, what that indicates is that there are so many really talented women out there who are ready to step up and take those challenges. And I'm sure, though, that somewhere along the line, they would have had another woman shoulder tap them and encourage them to do that. However, you know, as much as it's worth celebrating, Māori and ethnic diversity on public sector boards is continuing to increase. I want to see it grow more. So within the Ministry for Women, we have what we should call a leadership pipeline. And I happen to sit on a cabinet committee called APH, it's Appointments and Honours Committee. And so we are the committee that is charged with placing women onto these public sector roles. So every time we have these new positions and new vacancies coming up, I'm now sending quarterly letters to my cabinet colleagues reminding them that we have this 50% target to meet and reminding them that the ministry holds a database of about 1,600 very, very talented women that these cabinet ministers need to be looking to fill in these positions. So I'm the squeaky wheel that's going to be very, very annoying to my cabinet colleagues, but I think this work is very important, so I'm completely unapologetic about it. And, you know, while I can talk about the gains that we've made in the public sector, every time I give a speech similar to this to audiences, I say, right, private sector, step up. The numbers on the private sector are not great. It's about 31%. And, you know, and I often say, if the public sector proves it can be done, we've proven it can be done, so get busy, get out there. So women are holding just 31% of director positions across NZX-listed companies, and that includes 36% 8% on S&P and NZX, the top 50 company directorships. So, and when we compare, it sounds, you know, it's average, it's not great, it's average, but when we compare those companies to our counterparts around countries like Australia, the US and Canada, we're way down. So there is a long way to go and there's a lot of work to do. So I'd encourage anyone in this room who might be working in the private sector who has an opportunity to appoint women to go for it. But what was I going to say? And I was just quickly on that note, just wanted to also acknowledge groups like Global Women and Champions for Change, because they really have led the way on this. And I know, you know, as of next year, we're going to see a lot more agitation in that private sector space. So that's really exciting as well. So creating the momentum is a big part of the work to increase that representation. And it requires stepping up and it requires challenging the norm, changing conventional ways. It requires each and every one of us to demonstrate the commitment to prioritise the issues and to lead with action. All leaders need to think really broadly about diversity and think about how society benefits when there are different perspectives and there's a diversity of thought around a board table. That's how you find creative solutions to the really gnarly, crunchy issues that are impacting our communities and our society these days. Most importantly, lead by example. And I don't need to tell anyone here in the room that. I know you already are doing that, but I just encourage the message again, because I think together we can empower the next more diverse generation of leaders. So, ladies, New Zealand, as we all know, has a very proud history of progressing the rights and the interests of women. And I know that I'm surrounded by people here today who share that passion. I know our work is far from done. And I know it takes time and it takes determination, accountability and commitment to bring about lasting change. But hey, you know, our foremothers did it for us. They really did it. And Louise, we often talk about, you know, we're so proud of the fact that we, particularly from Christchurch, the home of Kate Shepherd, because, you know, we own Rosemary, we own Kate, she's our girl. And, you know, it was so cool that the suffrage movement was born here in the Garden City. And I'm so pleased you've been able to bring your conference here to such a special place in you know, the history of women's suffrage and that movement. But look, thank you for the opportunity to be here with you today. Keep up your hard work. I do genuinely want to see better outcomes for women, and I really do hope that we can work together to achieve those. And thank you again for the opportunity to be here this morning.